Life Audio.
The Mama Take Heart podcast with Rabrina Rettle is brought to you by Life Audio and is a part of our Faith Toolkit series. For more inspirational, faith-affirming podcasts, visit lifeaudio.com.
You're listening to Mama Take Heart, Understanding Your Gen Z Girl, a show designed to help you be the compassionate, gospel-centered, and influential voice in your girl's life. I'm your host, Rabrina Rettle. In 2014, after years of silently struggling with social anxiety and sensory processing issues, Dr. Lamar Hardwick was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder at the age of 36. He holds a Master of Divinity degree from Emory University, as well as a Doctor of Ministry degree from Liberty University School of Divinity. He is a graduate of the Yale School of Divinity Clergy Scholar Program and a 2017 graduate of Georgia Forward's Young Game Changers Program, which included 50 of the state of Georgia's top thinkers, innovators, and leaders under the age of 40. In addition, Dr. Hardwick is currently pursuing a PhD at Union Institute and University. Dr. Hardwick is a contributing writer to multiple blogs and magazines, including The Mighty, Key Ministry, Christianity Today, Huffington Post, Autism Parenting Magazine, and Zoom Autism Magazine. He is the author of Epic Church, as well as his best-selling book, I Am Strong, The Life and Journey of an Autistic Pastor. He is the lead pastor of Tri-Cities Church in Atlanta, Georgia. Today, he serves as an autism advocate and conference speaker, helping to educate and train churches and faith communities about autism awareness, acceptance, and advocacy. Dr. Hardwick is a father, husband, pastor, and author. And today, we're going to talk about his most recent project, Disability and the Church, A Vision for Diversity and Inclusion, which was a 2021 InterVarsity Press Reader's Choice winner. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Hardwick. This conversation is very important and necessary conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay, I'd like to start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your story?
Yeah, I was raised a military brat, and so had the privilege of living all over the world, including overseas. And wow, okay, so we did a couple of tours in Germany, and I ended up graduating from high school in El Paso, Texas, where my dad ended up retiring. Went on to college and stumbled my way through that and met my wife there, and we got married in 2001. So we just celebrated 21 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And so, we have three beautiful children of our own, and we live in the Atlanta area in Georgia.
All right. Yeah, we have that in common. That military brat experience is quite interesting and unusual. And in my experience, it kind of prepares you for adulthood. You have to adapt easily.
Yeah.
You have to be able to meet different people. So yeah, it's very interesting. Okay, let's talk about your story and your being diagnosed on the autism spectrum. I believe you said you were age 34. Is that correct?
36.
36. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I tell people I wasn't diagnosed till I was 36, but probably around age 7 or 8, I started to realize there were some differences between me and my peers. Things like, I always did pretty well academically, but socially, I did not do very well at all. As a matter of fact, when I was diagnosed, my mother and I were going through some history. She did admit that I had a teacher, I think in second or third grade, that came to her and said, you know, Lamar's very smart, but there's something wrong with him and I can't figure it out. So, you know, just things like not understanding body language, social cues, voice intonation, facial expressions, all things that are very important as you're growing up. Those are all things that I actually didn't know existed until I got much older and got diagnosed. So 7 or 8, I started to realize there's some differences. And I actually just started faking it. I just mimicked what I saw the other kids do. Because I didn't know what to do to fit in, but I started to learn very quickly what not to do to get bullied. So, you know, the autism community is often referred to as masking, where you just mimic the behaviors of those around you. I did that for years, and I would always hear things from other kids like, your voice sounds like a robot, you don't smile, you look angry. I didn't understand a lot of the jokes. So fast forward, after kind of stumbling through life, I actually had a predecessor at a church I previously pastored. I went in as a youth pastor and my predecessor stepped down. And the leaders of the church wanted me to take over preaching and teaching in the adult service because people enjoyed my preaching. But I heard a lot of what I felt like were ugly comments that almost prevented me from becoming the pastor. Things like, he walked past me, he didn't speak, he looks unapproachable, he's not very social. All things that I heard as a kid, but I was hearing it in adult language. And to be quite honest, that was a very difficult. It was about a 16-month interim period before they officially named me the pastor. And it was a very difficult time. As a matter of fact, I started having anxiety attacks and lots of other things. So I finally, long story short, decided to try to find someone who could help me to figure out what I had always struggled with. Because I just really never was able to pinpoint why people had so many issues with me and why so many relationships went wrong. So I was always a smart kid. I read a lot, very intelligent, but just didn't do well socially at all. So eventually, after about a year of doing my own investigation, I realized that after watching videos and seeing other people talk about autism, I said, you know, this is what I've been struggling with my whole life. I didn't have a language for it. So after about a year of doing my own investigation, I got the courage to approach my wife and say, I think I know what my challenges are. I think I know what our communication challenges are. And so she helped me to find someone who would diagnose me as an adult, which is very hard to find. And so after about 3 or 4 sessions with this therapist, she did confirm what I had already suspected a year earlier, because I had done my own homework. So at age 36, in December of 2014, I was officially diagnosed on autism spectrum.
Well, that's a very long time to go and not know. And I can't imagine that's a lot of pain to have to go through. To have those different experiences, not know why, not what's going on, or, you know, those types of things. So it's very interesting. You're very courageous that you pushed through, and your wife was very compassionate when she found out. I'm sure for her, it was also an aha moment of understanding. I've shared on the show before that my daughter has nonverbal learning disorder. And I think she was diagnosed at 17, and she too had a lot of problems with nonverbal. Of course, that has to do with what you talked about: social cues, facial expressions, tonality of voice, those types of things. And I believe I think I read somewhere that nonverbal communication is like 90 or 85% of communication. It's a very high number. And so that is very difficult to go through life. And like you said, you have to mimic because you're struggling to figure out what people mean when they say certain things, or what the look on their face and all that kind of stuff. You know, when you talk about your book, you talk about diversity and inclusion. And you have a unique perspective when it comes to diversity, because you are an African-American Black pastor who is on the autism spectrum. And people, not everyone do they think of abilities when they think about diversity. So if you can talk to us about why is it so important to bring those terminology together?
Yes, it's a good question. So that actually stemmed from a talk that I gave years ago at a Disability Ministry Conference, mm-hmm. when I started to realize that the culture that we live in, including the church, has become increasingly more aware of lack of diversity. And most of that has been aimed at ethnic and racial diversity. And obviously, we have a lot of challenges in this country that we're continually trying to get better on. But what I discovered is out of the 61 million people in the United States, 61 million people, rather, I should say, have disabilities. That's one in four. And that number is not even counting those who are 65 and older, who have sort of some age-related limitation. And it also doesn't include those who are 18 and under. So the number is much higher. But when you run those numbers, that actually means that the largest minority group in our country is actually persons with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I started talking about this back in 2016, 2017, that we can't have a discussion about diversity, equity, and inclusion and leave out the largest minority group. And so if we're going to talk diversity, we have to zoom out and say, yes, racial and ethnic diversity is important, but we're leaving out a huge population that's actually a large minority group. And in order to be faithful to that conversation about diversity, we need to make sure that we're including the disability community in those discussions.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
I know it's very difficult. I've had conversations with parents who have children with disabilities, and they have a hard time attending service. Mm-hmm. One, because they don't have a ministry that they can take their child to. They take them to a Sunday school class, and the teacher doesn't know how to interact with the child or help the child along. Then it kind of is a blowback to the parents. They get a complaint and that sort of thing. So it discourages them from wanting to attend church. And I have a friend that I interviewed another episode where she talked about they experienced so much hurt from the church that they don't go to church anymore. And so it, to me, is just very important. Anytime you're excluding a people group from the gospel, that's a problem. So why don't you talk to us about how the church has fallen short in the area of inclusion and diversity with people who aren't abled? Hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, that can also just be found in just basic data, like the majority of churches in our country, and really this is a global issue, but I'll just focus in our country, the majority of our churches don't reflect that one in four. You know, that's a very high number. And so if you look at the churches and communities, you oftentimes will not find that same statistic mirrored as far as persons with differing abilities actually being able to attend church. Mm. And so I think one of the ways that the church has fallen short is that it hasn't included those persons and their families in positions of leadership to help guide the church in ways to become more inclusive. So an example there is, there may be things, unintentional barriers that the church puts up. I'll use myself as an example, and I'm a pastor, so I have control over how to shape these things. But you know, one of the things that's very common for people on the spectrum is sensory processing challenges. Another thing is executive functioning. So many of our churches are loud, and they oftentimes don't have proper signage, or they don't have a way in which helping people who are neurodiverse to transition from one element of the service to the next. And those times are some very simple things, but often we find the reason why that is because most of how church is constructed and how we conceive of church has been thought of and imagined by the same types of minds and bodies. So if you don't include persons with disabilities in the discussion of what church should look like, it's no wonder why we have all these barriers for them. And not just physical barriers, not just, you know, access to the building, even theological barriers, spiritual barriers, right? We sometimes say things in church that are harmful. We sing songs sometimes that are harmful. And a lot of this is not intentional, but if you're not talking to people who that's their lived experience, you'll never get understanding on how to do things better. Mm-hmm. So I would say the number one thing is, and I'd ask your listeners to think about how many persons with disabilities do we see leading churches mm-hmm. or in leadership positions in churches? Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then you're going to be hard pressed to make the proper accommodations to welcome them.
Mm, that's very true. Yes, there's a story in your book when you talk about, I think it's in the Gospel of Luke, when Jesus is invited to the home of a Pharisee for mm-hmm. to eat, and how it was kind of a setup because they also had a person at the table that was disabled mm-hmm. and just how they tested Jesus on the Sabbath and whether or not he would heal mm-hmm. this person. Why don't you kind of talk to us about why you use that story? And what does it mean?
Yeah, so that parable of the banquet, what's interesting is Jesus goes to a dinner party, and then at the dinner party, he tells a story about a dinner party. So in the beginning of it, he's actually being tested. They bring in a man. They invite a man who has dropsy, which would sort of be the modern day equivalent of congestive heart failure. So it would cause his limbs to swell. Mobility would probably be an issue for this man. But their only reason in inviting him was not to include him. It was to exploit Jesus. Mm. So right off the bat, we see that sometimes in church, we even have made the mistake of making persons with disabilities object lessons rather than real people. And so Jesus goes on to heal this guy. He dismisses him because he knows they never intended to really include him. He was just there to be something to be used as a placeholder for them trying to trap Jesus in some kind of. But then Jesus talks about how, you know, when you throw a dinner party, don't take the seat of honor and don't invite people who can repay you. Instead, he says, invite the lame, the poor, the crippled, all the people on the margin, those who have physical limitations, those who have disabilities, invite them first. And then he goes on to tell a story about that a man throws, and he sends his servant to go out. And the man says, you know what? I've invited all the people that you told me to from this community, the lame, the blind, the poor, the crippled, and there's still room for more. And so what I share with pastors and leaders is that you get a couple of things. I won't share them all, but one of the main things you get out of that is that Jesus says when you're building this great big banquet, or otherwise known as the church, start with that community first. Mm. The reason why it's so difficult, I have many pastor friends and I talk about how it's, we talk about a lot of things, theology, budget, mission, vision, and ministry to the disability community hardly ever comes up in those conversations. And it's hard to fit into our conversations, our visions, our budgets, because they're always an after. But when Jesus tells a story and he says that when they're invited first, the servant says there's room for more. And what I share with pastors is if you start with them first and with them in mind, and you structure your entire church with them in mind, not only will you have room to do everything else you want to do in your church, but it makes the church overall, it makes it better and healthier because you're starting with the group that Jesus said to start with. And Jesus drops this line in that story as well. He says, don't just invite the people that you think can repay you, because if you invite this community first, then God himself becomes responsible for repayment. So there's a level of blessing on your church or your organization that comes with building it the right way. And what I tell people, the reason why it's such a struggle for us is because we built the church backwards.
So talk to us about ways that the church can do better. You just did give, first of all, start with the people that Jesus tells you to start with mm-hmm. in the Gospel of Luke. And then how do you build? Talk to us about that, because you are a pastor of a church. And so just kind of talk to us about how you build in your ministry, how you build to include people who are differently abled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll go back to the leadership point I made. So, you know, if it's 1 in 4, they're in our communities. Oftentimes I hear churches say, well, we don't even know anybody that has a disability. And what I'll tell them is they're in your community because the school system is serving those children. Those are children that have IEPs. There are other organizations in your community that are serving them. And it's an indictment on the church that that community goes everywhere else to get support except the church. So what I start with is by saying they're there. Start to build relationships with the organizations that are already serving that population. And then you can get to know them. You have to have proximity. But then also make it less of a taboo subject in your congregations. Talk about it, preach about it, provide literature about it. There are all sorts of months in the year that are dedicated to various physical challenges and chronic illness and those types of things. Take one of those months like April, where it's autism awareness, and just use that whole month to educate. Because the less taboo it becomes, the less it lessens the shroud of stigma and shame that often hangs over the church that people don't talk about it. When I disclosed my diagnosis to my church that I was at the time, it actually exposed us to a number of individuals in our church who they themselves had some form of invisible disability, something that you couldn't see, or they themselves had a family member. In fact, we found out the reason why you don't see that family but every 6 to 8 weeks is because they have a parent at home that has dementia or Alzheimer's that they're taking care of. And so I say that to say part of building is remove the shame and the stigma, remove the taboo, make it a safe place to talk about it. And you'll find not only are there people in your community that you can connect with, there are people right in your congregation that you don't know that have lived experience with this. I had members on my staff that I didn't know. I had a staff member that had lupus. I had another one that had anxiety disorder. I had another one that had severe OCD that she had to have medication for. So just me being open and removing the shame gave people permission to say, this is also what my family has going on. And slowly but surely, it made it more of a place where people felt comfortable. And I say that to say, once you connect with the people in the community and some of the people that are already in your congregation that have lived experience with disability, start leaning on them, put together a council, and have them to have real leadership in the church, because then they'll be able to point out to you the things that are unintentional barriers that are stopping people from being able to worship. So they'll be the ones that'll tell you, this is what we need to do in order to accommodate our children. This is what we need to do in order to accommodate. One quick story. In my previous church, when we did that, one of the things that we quickly learned was a lot of churches with modern sanctuaries like to have the lights down. And so what we ended up learning was the back end of the auditorium is where most of the people who had our older people who had mobility issues sat. And when I discovered that the lighting is an issue for them, they can't see. They already use walkers, wheelchairs, scooters. So that means that we can't do the cool rock star lighting anymore because I don't want them to feel unsafe. And what it was doing, it was driving an unintentional barrier to them being able to worship with us, which is why we weren't seeing a lot of our older members attend church. And it was just a simple fix as make the lights in the back of the auditorium a little bit brighter. Yes, it's not going to be as cool and hip, but I'd much rather them not feel unwelcome because they can't see than to us to have a whole worship service that's being a barrier for them. So that's just one simple example of when you have those people to guide you, they'll tell you what some of your issues are, and then you can make the adjustments.
There's two things that you just said that I really appreciate. One, you talked about the shame, and the last place you should feel ashamed about the way you are made is in church. Mm-hmm. That's the last place. And then the parents should also not feel ashamed about their child. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that you touched on that. And then when you talked about the having people who are differently abled or disabled in leadership positions, and I'd like that not just in, you're going to be in charge of disabled people, but in all areas of leadership, because you mentioned about how the lighting, and one thing I know is in a lot of churches, when they're singing during worship, and then they have like a light show, people with sensory issues, that is not helpful.
Sensory, people who have epilepsy, those are things that, so those are all things that are minor adjustments, but they're huge in being barriers for people. I'll tell you another one that was very simple. A lot of churches will have a time in the worship service where they'll say, this is pre-COVID, you know, turn around and greet someone, hug them. Well, I discovered, I did a straw poll, it wasn't scientific, but I discovered a large portion of the people in our congregation that were coming late were coming late because they were intentionally trying to miss that part of the service, because those are the people who are extremely introverted or had some kind of social anxiety like myself. And that was a huge barrier for them. I don't like that. I don't like being made to touch people. I don't like people touching me. And so we got rid of it. We just got rid of that part of the service because it was a barrier. And the people we were fussing at for being late were coming late on purpose because that was a barrier for them. And so when we removed that part of the service, we saw those people showing up on time. And so, you know, there are people who, you know, need a high touch environment. So we're not trying to exclude them either. But you find other places in the worship experience or in the building. So, for example, we set up a cafe. That's where people could congregate and have coffee and all the people who need a hug. And that's a sort of a designated area. But those who, you know, that was a challenge for them, they weren't required to do that as a part of the service.
Wow, that is really good. And that is a very small way to make someone feel welcome. And you're correct, because not everyone does want to be touched or hugged or whatever. And there could be any surrounding circumstances for that. That's very interesting. And I'm sure people don't really think about that. I'm glad you brought that up.
It's a very real barrier. It's a challenge for me. I don't like it. So I can imagine the people who were saying, Pastor, we come late because we don't want to have to do that.
Well, what can you say, if anything, to those who have experienced hurt by the church, by not feeling included and kind of alone in this? Do you have any words of encouragement for them?
Yeah, I'd first start by repenting and saying, you know, on behalf of the church, we're sorry. One of the things that came out of this pandemic was the persons in the disability community saw that when accessibility to the church became a problem for able-bodied people, the church jumped into action. Churches found money to put together cameras and streaming. And so there are some people that are saying, you know, we've not been able to go to church in years and you never provided any of those things for us. So I think it exposed us. And so I would just repent on behalf of the church that we're sorry. We demonstrated when COVID started that we can do better and that we need to do better. And so you have a right to feel the way that you feel. But my encouragement would also be is that, you know, as someone who is a follower of Christ, you also have the church as a part of your birthright as well. So I would encourage people to continue to contend for the church and continue to show up in whatever ways are physically, spiritually, and emotionally possible. Because what ended up happening is that as those families retreated from the church, we let the church off the hook. And so I would say, you know, encourage you to know that you have a right to find a community of faith that fits your needs, and you have a right to be able to belong and to participate and to serve. And so to the best of your ability, I would encourage you to try to find that, to keep fighting, but also find a community. There are many people like myself that are out there that are on the front lines that are trying to do this. There's lots of resources that are out there. So my final encouragement would be that you're not alone, and that we are fighting with you and for you to have a place in the church.
That's beautiful. Well, Pastor, how can our listeners connect with you?
Yeah, so I'm all over social media. If you're on Facebook, you can go to my page, Autism Pastor. Twitter. You can follow me at Autism Pastor. I'm on Instagram. You can just look up Lamar Hardwick. But if you can't remember any of that, you can go to my website, which is autismpastor.com. And then on there, it'll connect you with all of my social media accounts. Also, there's links to be able to purchase any one of my books. I've written three. And just anything that you would need to know about what I'm doing, where I'm going to be speaking, those types of things, you can find it on my website, autismpastor.com.
I will be putting those links in the show notes. I want to thank you so much for taking time to sit with us and talk to us and give us some encouragement. That was a very, very necessary conversation, and I'm so glad we had it. Thank you.
The honor is mine.
You can get Dr. Hardwick's most recent project, Disability in the Church, A Vision for Diversity and Inclusion, available everywhere where books are sold. Remember, God is for you and you're not alone. With His Spirit, you are filled with courage and strength of purpose. So don't fret, Mama. Instead, take heart.
Mama Take Heart is a production of Life Audio and the Salem Web Network. If you liked what you just listened to, would you take a second and leave us a rating in your favorite podcast app? It really does help more people like you find our show. This podcast is produced by me, Kelly Givens, and Steven Sanders, with executive oversight by Stephen McGarvey. You can find more podcasts like this over at lifeaudio.com.
Jesus wants our fears to launch us toward faith. Then he grins and says, "Do you trust me? Because together we can do this." With Mornings with Jesus, you can start your day in a positive way. Find hope through inspirational stories and scripture. Go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Mornings with Jesus. You can also download the Abide app for biblical meditations at abide.com.